Nice to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. And before we get into our program, I want to say a big thanks to everyone who contributed during our fund drive, in particular, those of you who contributed during this 11 to 12:30 time slot. We had a day on last Friday. We raised $20,000 during this program, and that's a wonderful statement for the very generous listeners that you are, and we really appreciate it. We made $775,000 goal, made that goal, and we're really pleased to get back to our regular programming. And today, we're going to start out talking with you about cameras and how to use that digital camera that you have. Maybe you're like me. We have three cameras, digital cameras. And I know how to point and shoot and the camera, and I can make minor adjustments. But as for all of the ways that I could use my camera, particularly my Nikon, I haven't done it. I haven't gotten it in my mind yet. Well, Jack Socha is here to help us out. Jack is from Spring Grove, Minnesota. He's taught photography at Western Tech College in La Crosse in the Lifelong Learning Program, and he's created a mixed media CD. It's called How to Use the Digital Camera You Just Bought. He's also written articles for Shutterbug and eDigital Photo and Imaging, so we're really pleased to have him with us today. And certainly, if you have some questions about your camera or about taking pictures, I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. Or in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890, 263-1890. Give us a call with your questions and your comments. Jack Socha with us by phone. Jack, hi.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on. Digging out from the greater La Crosse area after the snow.
So you had a little snow yesterday.
Oh, yes.
Well, did you get out and take any pictures?
Actually, I have been too busy just making sure that the pipes aren't frozen and things like that.
Well, I tell you, as we think about cameras these days, that changeover from film to digital cameras, it's got to be almost unprecedented in terms of the speed and the scope of it.
Yeah, you know, Larry, for those who have been around for a while, this is the biggest change since movie cameras were replaced by camcorders. Those of you who are old enough to remember the 8mm movie cameras, they were wiped out in a matter of months by camcorders, and it's almost the same thing going on now.
Yeah, it really is. And I think one of the problems for those of us who buy the digital cameras is that they're more complicated than it seems.
Yeah, unfortunately, in the old days with Kodak, with Instamatics, it used to be you push the button and we do the rest. Now you push the button and you do everything.
Yeah, it sure is. And is that why you put the CD together?
Basically, I began teaching this class several years ago at Western Technical College, and my small company has been publishing how-to stuff since 1991. So we're kind of tapped into the needs of real beginners. And what we've discovered is that people are going out and buying the camera, and they don't realize that it really isn't a camera. It's a computer with a lens attached to it. And there's 14 buttons on it. A year ago, Consumer Electronics Show was on, and one of the websites had a little contest where you came up with your idea for a gadget. And I took a picture of a digital camera, typical point-and-shoot, and using a little editing program, I erased all the buttons. And I mailed it into them on email, and I said, you'd have a dial on the top that says pictures for email, pictures for printing, flash on and flash off, and a ring to zoom the lens. And the next day, that was CNN's website, they called me up. And they said, where did you get that idea? And I said, well, it's what my students want. So if you're confused by the 13 buttons and the 14 menus underneath, believe me, you're not alone.
Yeah, and it really is confusing when you start looking at the cameras. There is an auto setting. Does that help us out? What are the other settings on the camera besides the auto?
Well, for a large number of picture taking, if you leave it on what I call the green zone, the little green square or whatever it is that's the completely decision-free, that will take care of a great deal of of what you need to do. The trouble is that if you get into a situation, for example, on a day like today when there's an excessive amount of snow, or someone is lit strongly from behind, like you're on a beach or something like that at sunset, the metering system just doesn't know quite what to do. And on many point-and-shoot cameras, right next to that green zone, there's the letter P. And that letter P, it stands for program. It still completely exposes the picture for you. That is, it selects the shutter speed and it selects the lens opening. But when you put it on P, if you look at your menu, there's a few more options that were not accessible when you were on the green zone. And one of the most important ones is this little plus-minus control that can increase or decrease the exposure significantly. Most folks don't even know how to use that, but the idea is if I was taking a picture of you and you were lit from behind, you'd come out a silhouette because the meter reads all the light behind you. Well, if you go to the P mode and you can access that plus-minus, you can usually use a little toggle to go up or down a couple of units of exposure so you come out properly exposed and the background gets a little overexposed.
So which way would you go, minus or plus?
I would be adding a little exposure. This way, the shutter speed would slow down a little bit, but because you're basically in the shade, we want to expose for you as opposed to the background.
Okay, so go plus. So go
right.
Go to P and then hit plus a couple of times.
Yeah, and on most cameras, when you do that, when you hit the plus or the minus, the little slider bar goes left or right, you can see the difference on the screen. And then take a picture, and if it comes out great, fine. If not, try a little more.
One of us, talking about looking at the screen, and before we take some calls here, one of the things I've noticed on my, and this is my sort of my video camera, digital video camera, is that when I have it outside, I have a hard time seeing the screen. And I've seen people have said to me, you know, I have a hard time with my camera looking at the screen when I'm outside.
Yeah, that's one of the problems that plagues most digital cameras. When I have people coming in to buy a camera, I always suggest, if possible, find one that also has an optical viewfinder, the kind that you used to look through. This way you can just turn the thing off, save some battery power, and not worry about it. But there are several companies that, if you go to a regular full-service camera store, you can find these little shades that will either snap on or Velcro on. And sometimes they have a little strap on them, and that provides a box around the actual screen that gives you some place to look.
Okay, and that's relatively inexpensive, too.
Oh, they're not terribly expensive, no, huh?
Yeah, okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about your CD and tell us how you've got that organized and what all is included.
Well, it's a computer CD. This one is for Windows, although under Linux or under Mac, you can run it under emulation. And it is designed to basically teach you two different ways. There's a lot of me talking on it, more than an hour and a half of audio, maybe 3 minutes per page. And then there are visual descriptions and charts and text to reinforce what's going on. We did it this way for a couple of reasons. The first is that we've learned that people, when hearing and seeing at the same time, absorb more.
Yep.
The other thing, quite frankly, is that in order to really use your camera, you have to be computer literate. You have to know your way around a computer. And we thought that anybody who can run a CD is already halfway there.
So that makes a lot of sense. You've got 90 minutes of information.
Oh, easily.
And it's kind of a mixed media, too.
Yeah, it is. We have lots of pictures and examples so that not only are we talking about zooming lenses, but also you can see a picture and see the difference. We have pictures that are blurred. We have pictures that are sharp. And we explain why they're turning out that way.
Our guest today, Jack Socha of Spring Grove, Minnesota, has taught photography for a long time in the Western Tech College in La Crosse, and the Lifelong Learning Program has created a mixed media CD, How to Use the Digital Camera You Just Bought. And again, if you have a question for him, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison. You can reach us at 263-1890. And you can email us, by the way, too, at talk@wpr.org. And we did get an email from Terry. And Jack, I don't know if you're going to be able to handle this one or not. Well, let's give it a shot here.
All right.
My Fuji FinePix 3800 is having difficulty communicating with my computer. It communicates through a USB port. Often the computer doesn't recognize that the camera is connected, although the camera is showing that a signal is being sent and will even have had its date and time reset, the common consequence of connecting with the computer. If I keep trying, wiggling the USB cable or holding firmly in the camera port, I will sometimes get a USB malfunction signal. And if I really persist, I eventually get a connection and can transfer photos. About 6 months ago, I replaced the USB cable and that helped, but I can't believe my USB cable is already bad again. I'm afraid the camera's USB port, a very, very small one, is going bad. Do you know of any person or company that will repair or replace such units?
Okay, we can fix that problem for $9.95.
Whoa!
Hey, go over to any store that you can think of that has cameras and purchase a little gadget called a card reader. These are a little box with a cable on them, and you simply take out the card from your camera and you stick it in the reader, and you stick that in your USB port, and then your computer, doesn't matter whether it's a Mac, a PC, or a Linux machine, will read the card just like it's a little extra hard drive. I recommend that you have one of these for a number of reasons. I don't like plugging my camera in. And I just like being able to take the card out, stick it in the reader. Some of the newer computers even have the slots built into the computer now. But also, if you've only got one camera, and you've got more than one person who likes to use it, maybe on a day like today, you've got somebody who wants to go out and shoot some pictures, and you say, have a good time, dress warmly, you can hang on to your card and stick it in the reader and keep editing your photos.
Oh.
So just go to any store that sells digital cameras, ask for a card reader. They usually have more than one slot so that they will accept different kinds of cards. And that's nice, because if somebody comes over to visit and they've got their camera, different card, you can use that as well.
Oh. Great tip, and it's like $10.
I've seen them for $10, maybe at the absolute top, 15 or 20.
Jerry in Waterford has a question for you, so let's go to Jerry. Hi, Jerry.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my question. I appreciate that. If you would, I'd like to have your guests give us some tips on selecting camera. I'm confused as to what I should be looking for as far as a camera is concerned for just for my own pleasure. I'm not a professional or anything, or don't aspire to be a professional, but if you could give us some tips, I'd really appreciate it.
What kinds of pictures would you likely be taking, Jerry? Family shots? Would you do some outdoors?
Both,
okay.
Yes.
Jerry, can I ask you a couple of questions?
Sure.
What kind of film camera did you use?
Well, I just used, I used a 35mm film, and then I used the newer one that came out after that.
The famous whatever that was.
Yes, right.
Now, when you said 35mm, was it a point-and-shoot or a single-lens reflex? Did it have a removable lens?
Yes, it did.
It did, okay. Are you planning on shooting outdoor life, wildlife and things like that?
I'd like to be able to, yes.
Okay. Yeah, it's a real good question. And the reason I ask you that is that most times, if you have used a 35mm camera with removable lenses, a typical single-lens reflex, you'll be most happy with getting a digital camera that works the same way.
Okay.
A lot of times, people end up buying a so-called bridge camera, a prosumer camera, they're called, that has a pretty long lens on it, but is really a compact camera. And although they're very good, they don't really work and feel the same as a single-lens reflex. And also, they may not be quite as responsive. And also, there may be other lenses you want to try out that are different than the ones that would be permanently fixed on the camera. So they're now getting ridiculously inexpensive. I mean, Pentax makes them. Canon makes them. Olympus has one. Do you have any existing lenses, by any chance, from your old camera?
No, I don't.
Okay, because believe it or not, some of the older lenses still fit on these newer cameras. It's amazing. But I would, if you've shot a single-lens reflex and you are interested in getting those long nature shots and things, they're a little bulkier to carry around, but I think in the long run, you would be you'd be happier buying one of those. And maybe, buy a little point-and-shoot one as a backup just for fun.
Okay. Question in regards to zooming. I know there's a digital zoom and mechanical zoom. Could you explain a little bit in that regard?
Yeah, I'm really glad you asked. That's a big part of our CD and a big part of my class I teach. Optical zoom is the traditional lens that zooms. It's kind of like putting a pair of binoculars in front of your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And the image is magnified before it reaches your eyes, or in this case, the sensor of the camera. There's a thing that the marketing people came up with called digital zoom. And all that digital zoom does is crop the existing picture and take the center out of it and make it bigger. So whenever you're shopping for a camera, and they've got some kind of a sticker on the box that says 30 times zoom, look at it very carefully, because it might be 5x optical and 6x digital. Completely discount the digital zoom. I recommend you don't use it, because it literally cuts away the number of megapixels that you're shooting with.
Mm-hmm.
And you can also just go home and, using your image editor, crop the center of the picture out, maybe more creatively, and you'll have exactly the same result.
What would be the minimum optical zoom that you'd recommend?
Well, there are, believe it or not, super zoom cameras out there. Again, a lot depends on how big a camera you want. If you are looking at a single-lens reflex camera, there are your typical 70 to 210 millimeter film camera zoom lens comes out to something in the neighborhood of a 125 to 350, because there's a difference in the size of the sensor. It's got to do with how much of the image is used from the lens. But you've got to be more or less careful of the fact that as these zooms get bigger, their maximum apertures get smaller, and that means there's more camera shake. So the typical lens that comes with a single-lens reflex is the equivalent of a slightly wide to slightly telephoto, and those really are not perfect for wildlife shots. You may have to sink some bigger bucks into a longer lens.
Mm-hmm. All right. Okay. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Jerry. Appreciate it. Jack Socha, our guest today, he's created a mixed-media CD, How to Use the Digital Camera You Just Bought. He's taught photography for a long time. Really pleased to have him with us. And you can join in at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. I'm Larry Mueller. Keisha Mabra, our on-air producer on this, the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking about how to use your digital camera today with Jack Socha. Really pleased to have him along. He has created a mixed media CD, as I mentioned, How to Use the Digital Camera You Just Bought. And before we go back to the phones, Jack, how do people get a copy of that CD?
Well, there's a couple of things. I would ask you to write down our website, which is acpress.com, acpress.com. There's full information there on the CD as well. And there's also a toll-free number, which is 800-647-8273. CD is $12.95 plus shipping, and it's, like I say, it's really quite complete. But you can read more about it on the website at acpress.com. I've also put a page up there. When you go to the website, you're going to see two red buttons. One says ordering information, which is ordering information. The other button is other AC Press pages. And there's a whole page up there I put up on all of the free image editing software that is out there. In my class I teach at Western Technical College in La Crosse, we give them a CD that is just filled with this stuff. It's called freeware, which means there's no cost or obligation. And the students are amazed at what they can do with it.
And so acpress.com, go there and you can get some freeware.
There's links, there's descriptions, screenshots, and links to about six just outstanding programs that I use constantly.
Cool. Let's go to Dave in Eau Claire next. Dave, hi.
Good morning.
Morning.
My question is related to when I zoom in on people, for example, my granddaughter on stage, my camera is taking pictures that turn out to be blurred. It doesn't seem to happen if I don't zoom in, but when I do some zooming in, then all of a sudden the pictures are blurred and they're of no use to me. What am I doing wrong?
Well, basically several things are going on. When you increase the zoom or the magnification of an image, any camera shake is also increased. So that's part of it. In addition to that, and this is a thing to really to check out, take a look at the specifications of your camera. They're in the instruction manual. They're way in the back page before the languages change. And it's a lot of fine print. But you're going to look at the specifications of your lens. And what's going to happen is, it's a point-and-shoot camera in most cases. Are you using that?
Yes.
Yeah. You're going to see the lens goes from a particular lens opening, like 3.5, and it drops down to something like 5.6 or 8, which means the hole gets relatively smaller.
Small, yeah.
Now, mm-hmm. what they don't tell you is that the more you zoom, the smaller the hole gets. So what's happening is when you zoom that thing all the way out to try to capture that shot, the amount of light going through the lens is decreased enough that the shutter speed drops to a point where you can't hold it in your hand. I tell the people in my class, and believe me, this is the absolute number one question. I do one-on-one tutorials over at TC as well. How come I can't get a sport shot of my kid on the parallel bars in the gymnasium without a flash with my point-and-shoot? And I tell them two things. I say, number one, the laws of physics have not changed because you have a digital camera. Mm-hmm. And number two, if you see those folks on the sidelines of a Badgers game or anywhere taking the sport shots, they've got these big gray lenses the size of a megaphone.
Yep. Yep.
So do you think if they could carry something in their shirt pocket and take the same picture, they would?
Yeah.
So you're up against the laws of physics. What I say on the CD is try to get a shot where there's not as much action going on. Learn to set the sensitivity of the camera, the ISO, up higher, which I can talk about in a minute if you want.
Mm-hmm.
And if all else fails, sit back and enjoy the game.
Thank you.
and your granddaughter.
Your granddaughter, right.
Thanks, Dave. Thanks for calling. Boyd in Milwaukee has a question for you. Boyd, hello.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call and
sure.
Hello to your guest. My question is basically this. I'm interested in learning to take infrared in black and white, and there was this book I looked at called American Ruins by Arthur Drucker. And when I talked with one gentleman at a photography store, he actually did say it'd be better to use a 35 millimeter and get some special film for it. My model is I do have a Nikon D50. Could I take them using a digital, or would it be better to go with a 35 millimeter?
That's a tricky one. I happen to know a little bit about this because I have shot some infrared. Infrared film is getting very expensive, and also you must load it in the camera in total darkness.
Okay.
I mean, you have to have it because it's so sensitive. It actually, even the little felt light trap on the film itself can let infrared in. Then you have to buy an infrared filter, which is a deep, deep special red filter to do that. Now, that will give you genuine infrared work, but you're going to have to get it hand processed very carefully, so it's very expensive. You can purchase some software to do pseudo infrared using your image editor. And there are a few companies that will modify cameras to shoot infrared, but once they're modified, they don't go back. Now, the absolute cheapest way to do it that I know of is that about 8 years ago, Minolta, which is no longer in business, they're owned by Sony now, their camera division, came out with their first so-called digital SLR. It was called a Dimage 7. Now, these cameras were originally $1,200. I was the first one on the block to buy one. They're now about $150 on eBay. Welcome to the world of digital cameras. The first Minolta Dimage, it has to be the very first model, the Model 7, did not have an infrared filter on it. And so if you put an infrared filter on front of the lens, you'll be able to shoot infrared photos unmodified. This is the only reason I'm keeping my Minolta Dimage 7. But there was an article in, I think it was Shutterbug magazine, so you might want to go to shutterbug.net. and type in infrared and see if you can find it. But if you go onto one of the auction sites or one of your buddies has got the original Minolta Dimage, they sell for $150. And you get that and an infrared filter, and you're good to go.
You're in business.
Okay, sounds great. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling, Boyd. And Jan in Madison, your turn. Hi, Jan.
Hi, Larry. I have... The first question I had has already been answered, so I won't ask it. Yeah.
It's got to do with being blurry, right?
No, it had to do with AC Press.
Oh, really? Okay.
I just wanted to know where to get your CD. I have a an Olympus 5000 zoom, so on and so forth. It has a date timer and. You know, date and time.
Yeah.
And I want to know how to coordinate that with file names, because each time you you start a card, it starts, you know, the same file name, you know, like P1001 and so on and so forth. And so when you're downloading onto your computer hard drive, you got to find different places to put them and change the file names all the time if you want to put them in sequence.
Right. Now, the thing that puts the date either on your picture or embeds the date into the picture doesn't have a lot to do with the computer time when the file is saved. The computer is going to basically transfer the image over, and then you're going to have a different time on that. So I don't think you're going to be able to my knowledge, sort your pictures by the time that is embedded in the picture.
Okay.
There is something, by the way, in many cameras called EXIF data, E-X-I-F data, and you'll be amazed what's embedded in there, including the time the picture was taken. And one of the programs that's free, that's on the website that you can download, called Fast Stone Image Viewer, lets you see all that information. Are you having trouble with duplicate file names?
Yes.
Okay.
In other words, let's say you start out with a 1001.jpg.
Yeah.
Take 30 pictures and then you put in a new, you know, or download clear off your card and your memory card and put it back in, and the next 30 pictures you take are going to have the same file names.
Okay, there's two things you might want to check into. First, go to the setup menu on your camera, not the taking menu or the print picture menu, but there's a menu where there may be a setting on there, and there probably is, that causes the camera not to reset the counter every time you take the card out.
Okay.
I mean, and it may, you know, you may end up with the number 25,000 eventually.
But
still, take a look in your instruction manual on that. That would be in the setup menu.
Setup menu.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, the other thing is, you also, and I'm a big fan of what they call freeware, which is free software. I go on to the Internet, do an Internet search with Google or whatever search engine for freeware file renamer, and you should be able to find what they call a batch renamer that will let you rename all the files at one time.
Oh, cool.
And that will help save you some trouble.
Thanks for calling, Jan. Appreciate it. Good luck. Colette in Hartford, it's your turn next. Hi, Colette.
Hi. I am looking to be purchasing a new digital camera, and I'm 24 years old. I've got a Sony CyberShot right now. I have a benign tremor, which causes all of my pictures to be extremely blurry, and I know that there's some new technology, or maybe not so new, that would allow me to take pictures and have that reduced somewhat.
So with built-in shake protection.
Right, right. There's plenty of it out there, but now I've got to warn you, there are two different kinds. There is optical stabilization and digital stabilization.
Okay.
The only one that's real is optical stabilization. The so-called digital stabilization simply senses when the camera's beginning to shake, and it artificially raises the sensitivity of the camera to pick a higher shutter speed, which, frankly, you can do with any camera on the market already.
Okay.
So if you're going to get one that has stabilization, get one that has optical stabilization.
Is there a particular brand or model that you would suggest?
No, at this point,
I know there's a lot out there, and they vary in price quite a bit. So.
Right. Well, again, as long as you get one that has optical stabilization, what you should do, I would suggest when you go look at these cameras, that make sure that they let you actually turn the thing on in the store and play with it. This may require you to go to a full-service camera store. But what you should try to do is literally take a picture in the store without a flash and see how they turn out. You may find two models both offering stabilization. To try a shot with each one, and you may find one works better than the other one does.
Okay.
Now, stabilization will not affect moving images, you know, the kid running across the gymnasium floor, but they will stabilize the camera.
Right. And that's, you know, I was listening to the program, and, you know, I understand that obviously you get what you pay for, and you can't, you know, with those big lenses, you get those better pictures, but you know, I'm just, my hands shake all the time, and, you know, it's kind of disappointing that I can't take pictures, period, without them.
Well, there's a couple
of things.
A couple of things to consider also, and this is going to be tougher to find. Take a look at the maximum lens opening of the camera. The larger the maximum aperture, the faster the shutter speed will be. The other thing is perhaps look into what they call a monopod, which is like one leg of a tripod that screws in the bottom of the camera.
Oh.
And that's something that, frankly, everyone should have.
Yeah.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much for your help.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it, Colette. Susan from Oregon emailed us, Jack, and she says, I used to use a Nikromat single-lens reflex camera, which I loved. Jack, are you saying that there are single-lens reflex versions of digital cameras?
Oh, absolutely. There's a Nikon, and your old lenses will fit on it. Pentax now has one, and the K-mount lenses will fit on it. I have a Canon one, and unfortunately the old breech lock ones don't fit, but the EOS lenses do, and I even have an adapter that lets me put on my old 40-year-old screw mount lenses. Now, when you put these older lenses on your camera, number one, you're not going to have autofocus. Number two, a lot of the automation probably isn't going to work anymore. And you may be back using the camera the way you used to, where you have to set the lens opening and the shutter speed yourself. In addition to that, because the sensor is smaller, there's going to be a magnification ratio. So a 50-millimeter lens from an old 35-millimeter camera on a digital SLR acts like a 75-millimeter. And that's not half bad.
No, that's not. Mitch in Green Bay, it's your turn. Hi, Mitch.
Hi, I was just, your lady with the shaking, I was going to say there's a really neat adjustable monopod out there that I used, and it works wonderfully, and it's got telescoping friction adjusters in it, and she can use it sitting down in a field house and taking pictures of people doing gymnastics, or she can stand outside and pull it up to full heights, and it'll works like a wonder. I don't remember the name of it, but it's really a wonderful toy, really a wonderful tool. Now, my question is, I have a Canon SD900, and I am trying to get so I can do manual overrides on it, and I keep getting into this thing where I get the... it keeps going darker on me. It doesn't have as much light.
Okay, now this is a point-and-shoot or a single-lens reflex?
This is a point-and-shoot with a viewfinder on there, and the reason I got the viewfinder was because I like to shoot outdoors quite a bit, and with just a straight point-and-shoot, you don't that can get blanked out so easy with sunlight or other lights involving.
And so you're trying to set the camera so that you can select your own shutter speed and your own lens opening?
If I can, yes.
Okay. There should be a manual mode on there. On most Canons, you have to, when you're in the setting to take pictures, you have to press the function button. And one of the selections should be manual. And again, I'd have to see the pictures to know what you're talking about. When you say, are the pictures getting too dark, or is it... the screen too dark?
It does both. It seems like it reduces the lighting in there. When I tried to go into that into the manual mode, it's like it only gives me about half the shutter opening.
Well, it sounds like it's simply set for a smaller aperture, and so it's not going to show you as much on the screen as far as brightness is concerned. There should be a little plus-minus slider that shows you how over- or underexposed you are, kind of like the old-fashioned single-lens reflexes with a needle going up and down. And you may want to take a look at that.
Those were my baby. I made wonderful pictures with those.
Mm-hmm.
I had a Pentax Spotmatic, and I carried it in Vietnam and all over.
Yep.
And that was my best camera I ever had in my hand.
Well, you should be able, if most cameras that have a manual setting, you're going to have a less, not as wide a range of f-stops, but you're going to have a huge range of shutter speeds. And basically, you're just going to have to get your old Sunny 16 rule out, which we cover on the CD, by the way, for those who've never even heard of an f-stop, and just experiment with a couple of lens openings and shutter speeds until you get the results you're looking for. But it sounds like you've got either the shutter speed too high or the lens opening too small. I'm not sure which.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And Jim in Marshfield, I believe, is next. Let's go to Jim. Hi.
Hello, this is Jim.
Yeah, hi. What can we do for you, Jim?
I broke the back of my camera, my digital camera, where the LED or whatever screen is no longer working.
Gotcha.
Would I be able to get that, send it in and get that fixed, or would I just be better off tossing the camera?
I hate to say it, but not economically feasible to replace it. What kind of camera was it?
It was an Olympus, about a 6 pix.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the way that the camera world is moving is the new models come out, they get less expensive, more powerful, and better lenses. And by the time you spent the $300 or whatever it would be to fix it, you might as well buy a new one.
Yep.
It does happen. There are some screen protectors you can purchase for certain models that are like plastic that fit over those. One of my complaints about digital cameras has been that they don't have a little fold-down deal on it. Some of the Canon power shots where the screen swings out actually can turn around and fold back into the camera body with the screen facing in as opposed to out, which I kind of like. But, yes, I'm afraid that's a problem.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. And Mike in Seneca is next. Mike, hello to you.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I have a couple quickies here. I got to just open this up and start using it about a week ago. It's a C653 Easy Share Kodak.
Okay.
3X zoom. Mm-hmm. And I don't like it. I'm used to a 35mm reflex.
Yeah.
Anyhow, I mean, I'm going through, it's got two AA batteries all it takes to power it, and I'm going through batteries every about a little over a day, and these are alkalines, and they're just shot, and I think something's wrong with it. There must be a heavy current draw or something.
There's nothing wrong with your camera. Unfortunately, the best thing to do, and also it's pretty ecological, is to go out and buy a couple of sets of nickel metal hydride rechargeable batteries and a charger. They last very long, and then you can keep recharging them as you go. When you go look at the battery, look at the side of the battery for the milliamps. The bigger the number, the more charge they hold. I think the current high number is around 2,500 milliamps. That's up from 1,600 a few years ago. And if you buy four of them with a charger, you keep one set charged, put one in the camera, you get pretty good results out of them. But I've had, in the early days, cameras that just sucked down a couple of Duracells in 45 minutes.
Oh, boy. All right. So there you got it, Mike. Thank you very much for calling. And, Jack, thank you so much. Let's go back to I just want to mention again, for those who might want to get your CD or to find out more, you've got your website. And what's that website?
It's acpress.com. That's acpress.com. And we also have a toll-free line. This is basically, this is our own office, not a phone bank.
Mm-hmm.
It's 800-647-8273. And that is also on the website. But we've also got it where you can, you know, click and buy with PayPal using your credit card or whatever. So the secure ordering online as well.
And lots of freeware on your website.
Yeah, that page, I just put it up recently because I thought you might want it. It's a list of, I think, half a dozen 100% free programs that I use constantly. One of them is one by a French guy who is a graphic artist and a programmer, which is an unusual combination. But I there's nothing wrong with purchasing the $300 programs that are out there. But most folks who buy a $150 camera do not want to spend more for the software than for the camera.
Yeah.
And these pieces of software you can download, they really work.
Jack, a pleasure. Hope you'll come back and be with us again.
Anytime.
Thank you, Jack. Jack Socha of Spring Grove, Minnesota. He's taught photography at Western Technical College in La Crosse and the Lifelong Learning Program, and has created a mixed media CD, How to Use the Digital Camera You Just Bought. And if you've been listening, you know that he knows a lot about cameras and about taking pictures. So take a look at his website, acpress.com. And you can order the CD or get some freeware off his website. That's great. Tell you what, I'm in the market for some new glasses, and I've had a miserable time with it. I'll tell you that right now. I've been a couple of times, and I've had a couple of pairs of glasses that didn't work for me. So I'm really happy to have our next guest coming on, Jim LaLuzerne of De Pere, Wisconsin, to talk with us about selecting prescription eyeglasses. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.